Can we figure out how to sit so we don't have our backs to the Beatles? I don't know about that. Jai Radha Madhava Punjabi Hari. Jai Radha Madhava Punjabi Yashodhanandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashodhanandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashodhanandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Panachari Radha Madhava Punjabi Jai Om Vishnu. Prabhupada, Paramahamsa, Paribhava, Acharya, Ashtotera, Sutisri, Srimad, Sivan, Girisha, Boy, Sharanada, Vinda, Bhakti, Vedanta, Swami, Sri, the Prabhupada. Jaya Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Puri Raja Acharya Ashtatara Shatta Sri Srimad His Divine Grace Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasati Goswami Maharaj Prabhu Pad Ki Jaya Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jaya Niskan Bibhiti Founder Acharya Srila Prabhu Pad Ki Jaya Maham Acharya Srila Hari Das Thakur Ki Jaya Kamsi Kaho Sri Krishna Chaitana Prabhulita Ananda Shadvaita Gadadha Srivashri Gaur Bhakta Vrindi Ki Jai Sri Sri Radha Krishna Kupa Kupina Shama Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Sri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Sri Mayapur Navadi Dham Ki Jai Ganga Mai Ki Jai Jamuna Mai Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Tulsi Devi Ki Jai Shomavera Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Nitai Gaura Pramanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled. All glories to Sri Guru. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Sri Mate Bhakti Vedanta Shamini Tinamane Namaste Sharasvati Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nirvisesha Sinyavadi Vishchatya Satarine Bukam Karoti Bachalam Pangulam Gayate Girin Yakrapa Tamaham Bande Siguru Dinaparinam Panchaka Paturavischa Kripashyendra Vivacha Putitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitana Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vashari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Hare Hare. So, this morning I finished an article on criticism. And I thought I could discuss a few things because it's on my mind. And the purpose of this article was to investigate why we criticize. And so as we discuss, you can see if you can identify with some of these causes. Before we begin, I want to read something to scare you. Is it all right? Do I have your permission to scare you? Okay. Fasten your seatbelts. Here we go. This is a statement by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. And when I was copying this statement, I was thinking that if you take it the wrong way, it could be discouraging. And it's not meant to discourage. It's meant to encourage. But sometimes devotees get discouraged by what was supposed to encourage them. So keep that in mind. Even if one is a Vaishnava, if he commits offenses to the holy name, he becomes unfit to render pure devotional service. It may appear that he is still being shown favor by the Lord as he continues to make a show of devotional service without difficulty. But the Lord is actually very displeased with him because of his antagonism toward devotees. Therefore, to give up nam aparad, we must first give up sadhu ninda, finding fault with devotees. And the reason this interested me, and you may have thought this way also, sometimes we see that one is making offenses consistently. There are some devotees that, for one reason or another, feel it their sacred duty to attack anyone and everyone who's not perfect, which is basically everybody. And they think that Prabhupada has given them that duty to rectify ISKCON. And sometimes they do it in a very un-Vaishnava way. And one would question, if the Shastra says, as it does, that by committing offenses to devotees, it will uproot your bhakti creeper, one may then question, how is it that they're going on in devotional service? Have you ever thought like that? I don't know. If you've ever met those devotees, most of them live on Facebook or YouTube. But you may meet them in person sometimes. They're kind of, what's the word? Preoccupied with criticizing devotees. It's just what they do. And they're chanting some 64 rounds, and when they finish chanting, they're back out there offending. And I always think, this doesn't make sense to me, because if you offend, it's supposed to uproot your bhakti. And this answered that dilemma, because here, Bhaktisiddhanta uses the word making a show of devotion. It's not really devotion, because if we're chanting the holy name and we're offending Vaishnavas, it's we're chanting Namaparag, so we're making a show. It's not really bhakti. So sometimes there's this idea of how much can I get away with and still go back to Godhead? Or we could, in terms of the context of today's classes, how many Prabhus can I offend and still go back to Godhead? Or how severely do I have to offend them? And of course, we're not supposed to think that way, but this statement is a reflection of statements that Mahaprabhu has made. At one time, Mahaprabhu made a statement that when someone offends devotees, and when he's chanting, I feel his chanting like burning cinder blocks or blocks of burning wood on my body. It's not pleasing. So I'm fond of saying, when you commit Vaishnava aparad, you buy one and get one free. When you commit Vaishnava aparad, with it, at no extra cost, you get nama aparad. Buy one, get, or another way of saying it is, with one, you get two. Buy one, get one free. So I wanted to start with there because I thought that was an important consideration, because someone may think, you know, I criticize and I'm offensive, but I'm still chanting Hare Krishna. And sometimes Srila Bhaktisiddhanta would say, a devotee does not criticize. So then the natural question comes up, if someone is very critical and they're wearing dhoti kurta tilak or sari and tilak kunti mala, they look like devotees, they walk like devotees, they talk like devotees. But I think it's good to remember this concept that devotees don't criticize. That's what it means. So you have to, you know, also be it, not just look it. Right? So, another thought that comes to mind is many devotees complain that they don't have a taste for japa, or they're not feeling the ruchi very deeply when they're chanting, or they're chanting but their spiritual life isn't looking so good, and they're wondering why. Well, this is one place to look, possibly. Because in theory, if one is chanting and trying to give up the 10 offenses, one will be advancing, and one's anarthas will be minimized, and one will be inspired, and one will gradually be getting more and more of a taste. So, if you take the medicine and the symptoms aren't going away, either you're taking the medicine wrong, or something's wrong with the medicine, or both. So that's something to consider when it comes to offending devotees, because we all have offended devotees and no thunderbolts hit us in the head. So we thought, well, you know, I guess I can do it again. Because it is kind of second nature to most conditioned souls, and you know, it gives you a sense of superiority and so forth. And you know, I made it through the last 10 offenses, you know, or 25 or 108, so you know, a few more won't hurt. But the sign that we're making the offenses is the problem, not that thunderbolts haven't hit us in the head, but I continue making it. That's a symptom of the problem. And we don't always think that way. We think, oh, what's the big deal? I must have not really been offensive because, you know, I'm still chanting. Oh, well, great, you're still chanting. How's that working out for you? You know, you have a taste. Are you inspired? Are you becoming detached and so forth? So in coming up with 38, and there may be more, this is my contemplation, maybe over 15, 20 years of thinking about this. One day I decided, let me see if I can write them down, just things that I have thought. And a lot of these I think are obvious, but you can make a note in your head, a little check by each one, and if this is something that affects you. And then think about what to do about it. Are we ready? We have psychotropic drugs after class if anyone gets depressed. After, you might get 38 out of 38. Yeah, you might. That could be difficult. Okay. Number one, to make yourself look better, you will make someone else look worse. Yes or yes? And I'm not going to ask for a show of hands if you've done that before. But I would guess, probably guess, at least once or more. Hare Krishna. Can I read it again in case you didn't get it? To make yourself look better, you will make someone else look worse. Prabhupada gives the example of envy, but this is appropriate. There were a group of friends, and one of the friends in this group became a high court judge, which is obviously a sign of a pretty high qualification. And one of the friends said, "That's impossible. He's like, he's just a bozo." And they said, "No, he actually became a high court judge." So it's making him look bad because he thinks, this guy is he's not as good as I am. And now he's a high court judge. That doesn't make me look good. So they're saying, no, he's actually a high court judge. And then he said something like, well, if he's a high court judge, he's like, it was an accident. He wasn't appointed. He slipped in the back door or something like that. So that's, it's an example, because it was making him look bad, because he didn't respect this person. Okay. So number two is similar. When you see others as competitors, you try to minimize them by criticizing them. So it's the same idea. He did this. Yeah, he did it, but, and then you give your rationale how he was successful without qualification. It's like an accident. Yeah. Something to uplift our position. The Shastra says that a devotee is always meek and humble. And meek and humble means we're not trying to be in the limelight. And we're always trying to put the other devotees in the limelight. We're always trying to put our spiritual master in the limelight, Srila Prabhupada and Krishna. We're not trying to be the center. That's the disease. And that's why criticism is so detrimental, not just because we're offending devotees, but it's feeding into the very cause of material existence, which is pride, which is why we came and why we stayed. And humility is the way out of this world. So every time we're criticizing, we are nourishing pride, right? Because it's either caused by pride or it's nourishing pride or both. And that is the prison door in the material world. It's pride. So this is important to confront, because I think a lot of times when we criticize, we say, not that I'm really proud, it's like he just did something wrong. Okay, maybe he did something wrong, we have to correct it. But there's a way to do that. But sometimes we don't do it generously or we don't do it from a place of humility. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, and he was taking the role of a conditioned soul, but he was doing this for our sake. He said, the reason I criticize others is because I lack even one drop of humility. So he wanted to make that clear, because, you know, we have so many reasons why we think we criticize. After all, he's this, she's that, they did this, this has to be clarified and corrected. And obviously sometimes it does, but, you know, we're talking about the normal criticism we do. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta says, you want to know the cause, this is the cause. The complete lack of even a drop of humility. So it's coming from pride. So it's, you know, we shouldn't try to convince ourselves that in most cases it's not coming from pride. Some cases it is coming from humility, because you're actually trying to help a situation. But when it's coming from pride, we shouldn't pretend it isn't. Because pride is the enemy. We need to recognize it, and we need to correct it. And we need to know that when we actually become humble, then we got it. We understood Krishna consciousness. We have arrived. But if we remain trying to put ourselves above others by putting them down, we haven't understood. We really haven't understood this point. And this, if we don't understand this point, then we're not going to move very far in Krishna consciousness. So I think that's important. All right, here's another one, which is quite common. Your dissatisfaction with who you are, your lack of self-acceptance, self-esteem, self-satisfaction, just a lack of happiness with who you are in your life and your service and your sadhana and your marriage and your job and etc. Including just, you know, you ever feels like sometimes that you want to do something and you procrastinate and you never do it and you kind of feel like a failure. Or you actually fail when you naturally feel like a failure. Or you want to be better, but you're not, you feel like a failure. And when you feel that way, if you're around people who are successful, it makes you feel even worse. Doesn't you agree? And when you're trying to do something and you keep failing, and the other devotee in the next room in the ashram is super successful, it's like, ah, oh, I hate you. Something like that, right? But one who's satisfied in hearing and chanting, one who's relishing Krishna consciousness, they don't feel that way. Because they don't need other people not to be successful so they can be happy. Because that's what it boils down to. Prabhu, I need you not to be successful because it's really bothering me. If you could just not be successful, I would be much happier. Can we work out a deal here? He's not like that. Right? Because he's satisfied, in his Krishna consciousness, in his service. He's accepting himself, who he is, with his faults. And he's trying to be better. And then he's okay. And he's happy to see other people succeed. I mean, just think about it. If a devotee succeeds in Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada is so happy. We don't want to be unhappy about something that makes Prabhupada happy. And we can understand, if a devotee is doing well in Krishna consciousness, if a devotee is doing well in their service, if a devotee is advancing, Srila Prabhupada is happy. Yes? And I would never, ever want to be unhappy about something that makes Prabhupada happy. And I never would ever want to try to undo something that makes Prabhupada happy. Now I have a story for you. And this is one of many stories, but I have seen, personally, and I've heard other stories, in which a devotee that was dear to Prabhupada was criticized by one of his godbrothers. And Prabhupada, I'll put it mildly, he didn't like it. He really didn't like it. He really, really, really didn't like it. It was upsetting to him. I was in Detroit in 1975. Prabhupada came there. And I was visiting there for a few months. I don't know all the details of the temple, but the temple president was becoming a little lax in his sadhana. And he was, you know, I don't know if he was the first person there, or maybe he was the second person. But maybe he'd been in Detroit since the inception of that temple, and he was the head pujari, and the deities were very beautiful. Prabhupada loved the temple, loved the deities, loved him. And he was ousted out as president because he wasn't coming to Mangalarti, or I don't know, something there. He wasn't coming to Mangalarti, and maybe a few other things. His sadhana wasn't so visible. Prabhupada loved him, and he was so upset, and the devotees were saying, but Prabhupada is not coming to Mangalarti. Prabhupada didn't want to hear it. So, if Prabhupada likes someone, all I can say is, don't dislike him. Even if you do dislike him, I don't advise you dislike him. And we know, as disciples of Prabhupada, God brothers and God sisters, sometimes we don't like somebody, but we have to remember that the one you didn't like may be very close to Prabhupada. You agree? I always think like that. You know, like some of my God brothers will do something, and I'll think, why did you do that? That's so wrong. Or why did you say that? And then I think, but you, Prabhupada loved you. And if Prabhupada heard me say that, he wouldn't be happy. I have a God brother I was just speaking with, Guru Gauranga, and he has a little practice. He has a name for it. I can't remember the name. But he gave it a name. Beautiful practice. He said, when I have to make difficult decisions, or I've said something, or thinking about saying something, or thinking about doing something, I have this thought that I will be going into Prabhupada's room and I'll have to explain that I did it or that I didn't do it. And I have to be able to explain it in a way that I know Prabhupada would say, good. So very, very cautious. And so I think that's a beautiful idea, that you know, if you're going to condemn somebody because they've done something wrong, think, okay, I'm going to say this to Prabhupada, what's he going to say? And as a side point, Guru Gauranga told this to Pancharatna Prabhu, and Pancharatna Prabhu, he said, I actually had that experience because I was fundraising and I put on the letterhead ISKCON. But there was no International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And there was no founder Acharya, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And Prabhupada saw it. And, you know, Pancharatna thought, well, I'm going to fundraise from all these corporate entities, so kind of really don't want them to know. This is the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Because in the 70s, Krishna had a bad reputation. Certain part of the 70s, in some places. So Prabhupada called him in. Said, so you made this letterhead, where's International Society for Krishna Consciousness? Where's Founder Acharya? Why didn't you put it on? He said, I'm sorry. And Prabhupada said, you'll put it on next time? He said, yes. Okay. So, a nice meditation, isn't it? I'm going to support an idea. I'm going to go against an idea. I'm going to support a certain understanding of Siddhanta. I'm going to support a certain project. I'm going to say something in class. I'm going to tell somebody something. And now I have to go in front of Prabhupada and say, Prabhupada, this is what I did. What's he going to say? Another time, this story I was told, I think it was in reference, I'm not sure who it was in reference to. It was in reference to a devotee who was, we'll just say, not so popular with many godbrothers for valid reasons, but who had done lots and lots of service and made lots and lots of sacrifice for Prabhupada. So we have this in many godbrothers and godsisters who made tremendous sacrifices, pleased Prabhupada by their sacrifice, but they did things that weren't always right. And hurt the movement or hurt other devotees. So one devotee was with Prabhupada in his room, and he was complaining about a GBC who was in this category, who we could say was rough around the edges, kind of. Prabhupada said,
"Get out.
Stop it and get out." He didn't want to hear it. So Prabhupada set that example. So we should be cautious. And when devotees complain to Prabhupada about the misbehavior of another devotee, generally Prabhupada did not entertain it. But his response was, "You act the way you would like that devotee to act, and teach him by example," which I think is the most perfect answer you can give. Because, you know, "I don't like the way you act." So if I don't like the way you act, I have two choices: to tell everybody I don't like the way you act, or to act the way I would like you to act and keep my mouth shut. And Prabhupada said, "Maybe you'll see how I'm acting and maybe that will affect you." Right. One mistake we make: I see you acting wrong, improperly, and I want to give you some feedback, but you didn't ask for any feedback. Raise your hand if you like feedback unsolicited. If you do, we'll line you up here and we'll ask the audience to give you feedback. Those who are more evolved and more humble, yes, because feedback is good, but the average man and woman on the street is not overly inclined to get feedback. Not that we should want it, but we don't always want it. And so usually you accept feedback from someone you trust, someone you know who has your best interest in mind, someone you know who's not trying to pull you down and so forth. So we want to help others, but sometimes it doesn't help. So in those cases, Prabhupada especially is saying, well, act the way you want to act. I learned in my life, I learned many things from the mistakes of other godbrothers. And I think if I was in their shoes, I would have made the same mistakes they made. But they went before me and made the mistakes. And rather than put them down, I said, "Aha, if I'm ever in this position, now thank you because you showed me what not to do." And I actually appreciate it instead of condemning it. I said, "Well, you know, someone's got to make the mistake, and if you're willing to make it, you've done it as a service to all of us to show us what not to do." And it wasn't sarcastic. It was actually serious. I was learning from them. So sometimes we may want to condemn or criticize someone when they do something wrong. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, you don't really have a right to criticize just because it's objectively wrong, because that's a rationale. Well, you know, not really criticizing, they actually did something wrong. He said, no, you are criticizing. We don't want to bring that into the culture of Vaishnavism. Unless what they're doing is harming the community and we have to deal with it. So in that case, if we are trying to refrain from being critical, but we can learn, oh yes, he did something wrong, and I can learn from him. And I can try to show the example. I have this is a very common theme for me, that people have in different parts of the world where I'm giving classes, people say, "I have a problem with this leader, this temple president, this, that." It's very common. So sometimes there's nothing they can do because they're young devotees, and these are senior devotees, and it's, you know, the young devotee's not just going to go, "Hey, Mr. President, I don't like the way you deal with us." You know, it's not going to happen. Or unlikely they have that culture where it can happen, and there's not much they can do. And so what I often have to tell them when we realize, well, he's your senior, it's not really your position to tell him. I said, but someday when you are in that position, you notice the things that he did that you felt were not really proper, that devotees didn't really respond well to, and you don't do it yourself. You know, it's kind of like a transcendental way to get back at him. But he actually helped you learn that lesson. So I think that's important also, because obviously we can't change everyone. So, anyway, I don't know how many we're going to get through, but are you ready for the next one? This one is similar. These are kind of redundant. You are reluctant to admit another's high level of success and to make them appear less successful or incompetent. You criticize them. You know, like, well, if he became a judge. No, this is what he said. Well, if they made him a judge, he's not getting paid. That was his thing. Well, the only reason he's in that position is because nobody else is willing to do it. You know, something like that. You know. Pull him down. Number five. You become intolerant of others' failures for various reasons, and you believe you can put them in their place or even make them suffer for informing others about how and why they failed. In other words, like, someone's doing something, you think it's really, really bad, so you get back at them by telling everybody else. Kind of, you know, even things out. It's kind of a form of resentment. You ever done that? Kind of makes you feel good. Especially the icing on the cake of telling others about someone else's faults is when you find people that are like, yeah, I saw that also. Then it's like you got this club going and it's, you know, stirring the ocean of nectar, isn't it? Well, not the ocean of nectar. The ocean of poison. But have you ever noticed that? This camaraderie develops when you all hate the same person, isn't it? And all of a sudden, like, you made new friends, you know. Number six, you compensate for your low self-esteem with arrogance. And one of the ways it manifests is by asserting your superiority through criticism. So, you may not know this, but, well, you know, self-esteem is a pretty pervasive, low self-esteem is a pretty pervasive problem. But a lot of ways people compensate for the fact they feel everybody's better than them is through arrogance, trying to show that you're not better than me. So arrogance is actually a sign of low self-esteem. Did you know that? It's a compensation for it. So not always a sign of low self-esteem. It could just be a sign of feeling just really bad that other people are better. And so if you ever try to show off, just ask yourself, why? Why do I need to impress somebody? Have you ever tried to impress somebody? Have you ever done something to impress somebody, specifically somebody, one person? Yeah, so why? Why do I need to impress them? Would you like to know why? One of the reasons? It's because when we doubt ourselves in a certain area, then we try to impress others because we want them to think we have what we know we don't have. And it's embarrassing if they find out we don't have it, isn't it? So, if you're going to meet someone who's very intelligent, spend time getting a few 25-cent words from the dictionary so you can throw it out so they won't realize you're not as smart as they are. Or don't say anything. And something like that. Like, I doubt my own intelligence, or I doubt something about myself, and so I want to try to impress somebody. Now, that's one reason, not the only reason. But Prabhupada writes in the Gita that one of the reasons we try to impress people is because being honored is sense gratification of a very, very high level. Prabhupada writes, in the words, the satisfaction of being honored by others. That's very satisfying. And it's really a very high level degree of sense gratification. That's what it is. So we should know what it is for sure. There may be reasons we're doing it, but ultimately, to get the honor of others is a deep-rooted, deep-seated, deep-rooted need of the ego. You could say ego gratification, which, as we said, is diametrically opposed to bhakti. Okay. I'm going to skip around to some ones I think that are a little more relevant. All right, I'll read this one. This is a sign of an unhealthy person. Don't feel bad if you have this one. It's just to make you aware that this may be going on. You have unfulfilled emotional needs that you expect others to fulfill, and when they don't or can't fulfill them, you criticize them. The point is that when we're criticizing, we should reflect, why am I doing this? Because if we can get to the root of why we're doing it, we can uproot it and then overcome that need by understanding it's just something needs to be corrected in the way I see devotees, the way I deal with people, the way I understand myself, deal with myself, and so forth. There's another reason. If you are self-critical, you will tend to be critical of others. If you are self-accepting, you will tend to be more accepting of others. You agree? Yeah. So, how you treat yourself is the way you tend to treat others. So, I have personal experience of that. There was a time in my life as a devotee I was not self-accepting because I wanted to be more Krishna conscious than I was. And I was very critical of myself. And guess what? That made me critical of practically everyone who wasn't as high as I wanted to be, although we were all down here, including myself, because they weren't up here. I would criticize them. Can you relate to that? Yeah. So at a certain point in my devotional service, I realized, well, I'm probably not going to be a pure devotee in the next 3 years. So I might as well just deal with it, accept it. Like it's going to take a little longer than I thought. And what can I do? I'm on the boat, we're moving forward. So, and then I noticed at that point that intolerance and critical nature of others was like, it just kind of disappeared. Like everyone all of a sudden was, when I was okay with myself, I was okay with everybody. It's like, that was easy. So I think that's important to recognize. You know? Self-critical, criticize others, not self-accepting, tend to not accept others, whatever it is. You agree? Have you noticed that? I mean, when we become devotees, we have very high aspirations for our purification. And then at some point, within the first 7 years or 10 years, reality strikes. And it's not pretty. And you have to deal with it. It's not going to be as easy and as fast as I thought. And sometimes that's hard to accept. And then you have to deal with, well, I should be better. My Guru Maharaj wants me to do more, but I'm not, and I should. And he probably is upset with me. And you have to, work that out in your own consciousness. And then once you do, and you connect deeply with your sincerity, which is most important, that you're sincere, then understand that your external level of advancement and progress and service is not always equal to the level of sincerity. It will happen. And make peace with that, then your tendency to criticize will start to go down. You don't need to criticize anyone anymore because everyone now is okay because you're okay. Does that make sense? And I don't know about you, but I don't want to live in a world where nobody's okay because I will drive myself insane. And as you know, as we started this class, there are members in ISKCON or more on the fringe or around it who are driving themselves crazy focusing on what's wrong with devotees. Sometimes people mistreat you and you don't get upset and your friends say, Why don't you get upset? You should be upset. They mistreated you. And you say, because I don't want to drive myself crazy. That's why. I have better things to do, better things to think about. And if I focus on why I'm upset, then my hearing and chanting is affected by it. My mind is disturbed. I can't function properly. So when we are more generous with devotees and accepting, then guess what happens? Then it leaves this big window open where you can appreciate them. It's like all of a sudden, when you're self-accepting, you can start seeing the good because you were clouded, because you couldn't accept yourself and you saw everybody. I want to be perfect, and I don't like it that you're not perfect, and so all I can see is how you're not perfect. And then I don't leave any room for appreciation, which is so important, isn't it? Srila Bhakti Siddhanta said, when I become humble, then I'm in a position where I can appreciate the lotus feet of the Vaishnavas. That's when I can, when I just clear out all this critical mentality, then I can start seeing, oh, devotees are wonderful. Devotees are amazing. I can appreciate them. So that's very, very important. And it's very, 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 very helpful for our Krishna consciousness. Because what you appreciate in another devotee, guess what? It comes to you. And what you find fault in, guess where that goes? Boomerang. Any of you have that experience? You find a fault in someone, and then, boom, the next day you're doing the same thing. I think we all have that experience. But it works in a positive way. You appreciate someone, and then that good quality comes back to you. What a deal, right? Amazing deal, yeah. So, now here's the common one. Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about this. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur talks about this. Because I'm so honeycombed with faults, then I see my faults in others. You see your own faults in others, and because you are not healing them in yourself, you condemn others for having those faults. Seeing their faults reminds you of your own faults and the pain those faults are causing you. Have you ever seen a devotee chant japa like this? And I know the answer is yes. Have you ever seen that? And you're like, ah, why are you doing that? And the reason you're upset is because that's how you chant. And if you don't chant that way, it won't bother you. It'll just be like, poor Prabhu, you know, he should go to a japa with japa. And then you go off. But if you chant like that, it catches your attention and it bothers you, doesn't it? When we find faults in others, what we don't always realize is we're finding fault in ourselves, but we don't want to admit it. And one way to not have to deal with the fault in yourself is find it in another and blame another. That way you can make believe you don't have it. But if another's fault really bothers you, generally we can understand it's bothering you because you have it and you're not dealing with it. And when you deal with it, it won't bother you. Does that make sense? Any of you have that experience? Like once you overcome a problem and you see it in another person, it's like, oh yeah, I used to have that problem. But it doesn't angst you, it doesn't cause angst. Okay. Ah, here's a good one. You blame others' success for your failings. Why did you fail? Because he succeeded. No other reason. He didn't succeed, I wouldn't have failed. Okay, really? Okay, how much would you bet that that's true? You tend to see yourself as a victim and naturally criticize or condemn the so-called victimizers. What does a victim mean? It's not my fault. There was a devotee, and he was about 24, no, maybe 26. He had a son who was 1 year old. And he wrote Prabhupada and said, this household life, it's hindering my bhakti. And my wife and the whole thing, was just, it's not good for my bhakti. And Prabhupada wrote him back and said, the sign of an advanced devotee is that no matter what situation he is in, he can be Krishna conscious, and he doesn't blame the situation on his Krishna consciousness. And he wrote a whole letter on this. Why? Why can't you be Krishna? Because it's his fault. It's like, Prabhu, you make me angry. And because he's a smart aleck, he goes, oh, I didn't know I was responsible for how you feel. You should have told me. So we sometimes think other people are responsible for how we act. Right? You make me angry. If it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be angry. So you're responsible. My anger is your fault. Of course, that's not true. But when we're being dishonest with ourselves, then we say things like that. Right? Okay, so you probably want to hear the other about 20 that we didn't get to do, 25. Well, the article will be edited in a few days, and I think it will show up on Dandavats. But before we go, I didn't leave you time for questions, but before you go, I just wanted to read something to you, which I thought was very interesting. And these are some of the stories in Shastra about the devastating effects of offending a Vaishnava. Just to give you a sample, it's not all of them, and you probably know all these stories, or most of them. Durvasa, when he offended Ambarish, he almost got himself killed. That was the reaction. Haridas Thakur liberated the prostitute. There was a whole plan, and the people who conspired against him didn't live happily ever after. And Daksha offended Lord Shiva, and that didn't work out too well for him. He lost his head in that sense. And then Daksha in his next life offended Narad Muni, and that also didn't work out well. So Bara Muni offended Garuda, and that also didn't work out well. He ended up, he wasn't, as we say, a happy camper after a while. He ended up getting married to many, how many wives did he have? 50? You remember? Was it 50? Devananda Pandit. What did Devananda Pandit do? I forgot. Was it his, you remember? Mahaprabhu instructed Devananda Pandit about what did he do? Or what did he say? Oh, he offended Srivastava. Oh, okay. The sin of omission. He didn't act when he should have. Okay, then you have Mother Sachi offending Advaitacharya, Srup Damodar correcting Bhagavan Acharya for his opposite dantic understanding, Ramachandra Puri offending his guru, Madhavendra Puri offending Nityananda. So these are some stories. I find it interesting because there are so many stories with tragic results, but it doesn't seem to like sway us. It doesn't seem to like, really hurt us. But I would say, or register with us, but I would say one thing to look at is our chanting of the holy name. And if we're feeling that we're troubled with the chanting of the holy name, we can go to 108 japa retreats, but if we're committing Vaishnava aparadas, it's not going to work. So we want to look at that. And so that's serious, because pure chanting of the holy name is the goal. And it does affect our chanting, even sometimes a little bit, because, well, I just offended Bhakta so-and-so. All right, Bhakta so-and-so is a little devotee, a little offense. But if you're willing to offend Bhakta so-and-so and you have the tendency to offend, it'll gradually graduate. And you may end up offending someone who, if you do, could destroy your bhakti. So be careful. We have to end, right? I just went late because we started late. But we end? Or we have questions or what?
Well, I have a... Well,
You want to make
anybody
a comment?
Otherwise, I can. You say self-critical is bad, but actually Chaitanya Mahaprabhu promoted that it is needed, not bad. When what in Sarva Bhattacharya's conversation or dealings with Mahaprabhu, what attracted Lord to purify his heart was a self-critical.
Yeah.
So it is actually good.
It's good if you know how to do it.
Well, that's why Prabhupada gave in the purport. I took it that way, intent and content. If it is for my own purification, yeah, self-critical is actually advancing.
I like to say it, seeing your faults. Because as the word self-critical for some people has a connotation of where it becomes, what's the word? It becomes counterproductive because they don't know how to do it. So instead of seeing how to improve, they just put themselves down. So it's the same thing, finding fault with yourself. That's what humility means. Criticism is to find fault with others, humility to find with yourself. But the idea of self-criticism in the common sense, that we see it as a problem today, is people can't do it because when they do it, they just become negative and they give up. It becomes tamasic.
Isn't that self-pity? Putting myself in the center. But Sarvam Bhattacharya, when he was criticizing himself, what I understood from Prabhupada's purport, that his finding fault of his due to the ego, the verse goes, Atmaninda kori kaila prabhura saran prabhutare darshan dite hoila man. That he criticized, he examined thoroughly, one by one. Mm-hmm. Why did I do this? Mm-hmm. I thought I was the bigger scholar than him. He's a young sannyasi. I know better than him. So that examination was very actually fruitful.
Definitely. I'm not saying not to do that, but that is what we should do. But there's another aspect of it where we don't actually do that. We just condemn ourselves. And it becomes a very tamasic exercise. Because we have to be able to look at this and say, okay, this is what I did wrong, and not become depressed and correct it, which is what we're supposed to do. But in some cases, people can't do that. That's what I meant. So it's more of a psychological problem. But you're 100% right. That's what humility is. Like Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, when you're getting deluded by others' faults, find fault in yourself. When you're becoming misguided and deluded by others' faults, find fault in yourself. Know that no one can harm you unless you harm yourself. So definitely. But what I found over the years of teaching is sometimes I would give a class and I would talk about finding fault. And all the people who had low self-esteem, it would make their low self-esteem get worse. Because that's what they're doing all day, is finding fault. But they don't know how to process it. So I became a little careful about how to present it, because I could see that they already felt so bad about themselves. I said, find out your faults. They're like, oh, that's all I do all day. I can't do it anymore. So it has to be more of a sattvic positive. It's like apichet sudaracha, remorse, determination. Yeah, I did something bad. I'm not going to do it again. So that's a sattvic approach. So you are totally right, but sometimes it becomes tamasic. And then they can't do it in a healthy way. Yes.
Hare
Bolo.
Hare Krishna. Thank you. This has been a very enlightening class. Each point that you went through just kept reminding me of a lesson that I never forgot from my fifth grade teacher, Mr. Tyson. And he told us one day, I don't remember what prompted it, but he said, each time you point a finger at somebody, there's three fingers pointing back at you. And I actually have reflected on that recently when seeing myself feeling negative walking away from certain situations, but also feeling positive too. And I could be misquoting, so please correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel that I've heard that Prabhupada said, when you look for hate, you'll find it. When you look for Krishna, you'll find him.
I never heard that, but it's true.
When you look for hate, you'll find it, but when you look for Krishna, you'll find him. And I've just noticed that if you look for the good in people, it can be an indication of goodness in yourself, being able to recognize that in others. But also, if you're criticizing, you know, and judging and feeling wrong about a devotee or their actions or how they do something, there's a reason within yourself as to why that is bothering you. So this has been a very deep meditation for me, and I wanted to thank you.
You're welcome. I can respond to that. If you're looking for hate, you'll find hate. I don't know if Prabhupada said it, but it's true. But he did say this. To one of his disciples, Prabhupada said, I have many faults, and you have many faults. And if we simply focus on one another's faults, then it will take us nowhere. Something like that.
It could have been faults. That sounds more accurate.
Well, obviously, whatever you're looking for, you'll find. If you're looking for Maya, you'll find her. If you're looking for Krishna, you're looking... Krishna is so amazing that whatever you're looking for, he'll give you. Because Krishna is like a GPS. So you put in faults in devotees, and then the GPS just takes you. Look at that one, look at that one, look at that. And you look at appreciation, and it'll take you there. Yes. Hare Krishna. Hare Bodo.
Couple of things. You alluded to this, but one thought came to me when you were talking about not criticizing, that we hear from the Bible that Lord Jesus told his followers to hate the sin,
right,
but love the sinner.
Yes.
So I do know some people within the movement that have been scarred by, you know, terrible things, and you said if it's something that causes harm to others, but I never know quite how to respond, because it sometimes feels like a person, or I can think of a couple people, that it's like the sins that they are aware of others having caused harm to the movement, it's like they have it on their radar, and I don't know how
they're affected by it, and when they see other people who are innocent, they
they're kind of like always trying to not that it's a bad thing, but it just seems like it's hard to change the topic.
Yeah, because they're a little bit shaken up by it, or even traumatized by it, and so it's having, you know, around, I'd say between around 1986-87, I started noticing that a lot of devotees who were initiated by Prabhupada's disciples, whose gurus were in good standing, they started doubting their gurus because of the mistakes of other gurus. And it's understandable, it's unfortunate, and it's just that, you know, perennial principle that the past is affecting the present, and we have to be able to heal the past to not be jaded by the present. And I think when people understand that, they can work through it and not, you know, hold other people responsible for things they didn't do that other people did.
And thank you. Another thought on a different topic. Actually, one place in a dictionary, the humility is described as honest admission of one's own shortcomings.
Nice.
Some self-reflection has to be there, but like you said, not focus on fault.
Yeah, it's we have to be able to see our faults without being discouraged by it. And Satchinandana Swami said something once at a japa retreat. When someone said after 64 rounds, it said, you know, so much stuff came up. And Satchinandana Swami said, congratulations. He said, that stuff was always there. You just didn't know it. And now you're seeing it. So why are you depressed? Obviously, we understand why we're depressed, because we didn't realize it was there. And he was trying to flip it around. Well, now you know it's there. So now you know it's there, you can work on it. So happy, happy, happy. I know the cause of my problem. But if, you know, if you want to delude yourself and pretend you don't have problems, then that's hard to do. But also, if you've, you know, been raised in a difficult situation where you've been constantly put down, it really is difficult to do that, because it brings back all that psychology of, you know, I'm bad, I'm bad, I'm bad. So you have to work through that. You know. Yes, Sranga Thakur.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for the class. Just an example of how there's a difference between self-examination and self-condemnation.
Yes.
I had a friend who tended to be really critical to other people. And until he got some counseling, he couldn't do this self-examination to see the connection between his own self-condemnation and his condemnation of others. And when he got it, he drew a picture of himself being bombarded by different voices that all had, you know, ugly faces. And this was his mental voices on himself, condemning himself. And
yes.
With the counselor, he was able to examine that.
Yes. It's a common problem. Especially, I was talking with a devotee who's a psychologist today, and I said, is it your experience that the negativity increases for many devotees after they become devotees? And she said, yeah, because higher standards, we're falling shorter now. So it's a real problem.
It's like we get what we're looking for.
Yeah. And there's some, you know, there's some pleasure in self-condemnation. Then you, like, you, if you condemn yourself as being bad, then you don't have to be good.
Mm.
So you've got no responsibility to be good because you've already just written yourself off. So that also is one reason we could do it. Sita De Muni is going to put the icing on the cake for us.
I can't help it. I got to ask. So what should a devotee do if in their heart they're feeling critical of devotees who are criticizing other devotees who are being critical?
Right. You should beat them all up.
I could dig that.
At least your criticism is out of compassion. So that's good. But, no, we're not supposed to tolerate when someone is being criticized. We're supposed to do something. You can't just walk away. The devotee's being mistreated, we have to do something. At one time, Prabhupada said something funny. He said, if a devotee's being attacked, you have to protect him. And Prabhupada said, no more Trinada peace unichena. Go protect that devotee. Go fight. So then that becomes like Arjuna's humility. You know, you fight. Yes.
So if we are around somebody, a devotee who is being critical of other devotees in a subtle, like, kind of gossipy kind of way, or something like that, how can we, and they aren't meaning to be like that, like, it's not like their intention, maybe.
Yeah.
How can we correct that behavior without being, without making them feel like they can't confide in you, or making them feel like they're terrible, or how can we kind of steer their mind in the right direction?
You can say. It depends on your relationship with them, number one. So there could be many ways to do it. Sometimes you can just be honest, but if they're very sensitive, then you have to be very sensitive. And you could ask them for help, you know. And say, sometimes you say things, and I know you're not intending to criticize, but I take it that way. How can I deal with it? And so you've indirectly made them aware.
Wow.
So without having to, you know. I mean, it's, you know, if you're dealing with very sensitive people, you have to be very careful. If you have a close relationship, you can just be honest and say, you know, I can't. I have a little joke. Because this question is always asked of me, what do I do when someone's criticizing? I say, as soon as you hear criticism, tell them, sorry, Prabhu, I have to go to the bathroom right now, see you later. And every time they do it, you say that, and after a while, they'll start to understand. I must be saying something wrong here.
That's not a different way. I'll take it on it.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's an inoffensive way to... Prabhu, I have to tell you about what he did. I'm sorry, I really got to go to the bathroom. because it's an injunction, we should not hear blasphemy of a devotee, because it really corrodes our faith. When we hear criticism, we'll lose faith in that person. We want to hear the glories of the devotee. That's what inspires us. Let me end with a beautiful story. Many, many years ago, Mother, what is her name? She left her body. No, she was the wife of, when what's his name was the temple president? My brain is going dead. Starts with an M. I'm getting too old. You know, like 20 years ago. Her name starts with an M. You know, from South America.
Oh, yeah.
Mitravindra, yeah. So, you know what year she left?
No.
Yeah. Probably like 2007 or 8 or something. So my daughter was like 5, 6 years old, right? And I couldn't come to the ceremony, the memorial, but my daughter was there. And my daughter came back and she said, that was the most amazing thing I've ever experienced. Everyone in the temple was crying. And I never saw my daughter that Krishna conscious up to that date, because it was hour after hour of pure glorification of a Vaishnava. And I noted that and I said, this is what happens when you glorify a Vaishnava. Even a 6, 7, 8-year-old kid is deeply affected by it. And the exact opposite happens when you criticize. You know, it really stood in my mind, this is the power. And many times I will facilitate an exercise where everyone has to go around and appreciate everyone. And after they do that, I joke with them. I say, okay, now we're going to go around and criticize everyone. And everyone's like, no! I go, well, 20 minutes ago, you probably would have been happy to do it, right? Because they feel so inspired by doing that. So it's good to have that experience. You know, so if you glorify, if you appreciate, you'll have a good experience. It'll help you. Thank you for listening and tolerating me. Please forgive any offenses I may have made or will make in the future. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, go premananda.